Hi, everybody. This is John Whittington and Simra Lieberman again. Great to have you guys on board. Today we're talking about the myths and realities of marketing. And thrilled to have NorCal representing with Linda Apopke, the marketing master. For those of you who don't know, Linda, there's a lot of things I could say about Linda. I mean, she's a friend, she's a colleague. And we've had a lot of...
We can't say all of them.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to punch out a couple of things just... you know, so that we know. So, you know, with Linda, there's a lot that can be said. But a couple of things I'd like to highlight just to kind of set the tone for the conference and you know, so that we can really understand the value of the information that we're going to be receiving today is, you know, she was recently named one of Silicon Valley's top 100 women of influence. Of course, she's a member of the Consulting Hall of Fame and Allen's mentor program and a master mentor. But she was also the immediate past president of Women in Consulting, and she serves as an advisor for the Astia Business Incubator. She's been quoted in a variety of publications, including Business Week, Fortune Small Business, Fast Company, San Francisco Chronicle. It goes on and on and on. And from a collegiate standpoint, she's done a lot of work. She's a program advisor for the Integrated Marketing Program at San Francisco State University's College of Extended Learning, where she teaches branding. And she's also on the advisory board at the University of California Santa Cruz Extension in Silicon Valley, where she teaches sales and marketing courses. Finally, she's an adjunct faculty member at West Virginia University's Online Master's Integrating Marketing Communications Program. So, obviously, you know, we have the expert, the marketing master here with us. And as, you know, a lot of people have said, you know, I think Rob Nixon at one point when we were talking to him about his practice, he was saying, you know, a lot of us know a lot about our consulting practice, but where we fall short is on marketing. We've heard Alan say that over again. So really kind of thrilled to have Linda with us today. We're going to uncover the myths and the realities of marketing. With that, I'd like to just turn it over to Linda. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
Well, thank you, John and Simra, for setting this up. It's fun. And I'm really pleased to be here talking to you about this. And first I want to say it is wonderful to speak to Alan's community, because then I know that you have a common language about some of the things I'm going to talk about. And the first thing I want to do is say I'm going to build on a lot of Alan's concepts. So I'm going to presume that you all know about and you understand and you're using things like marketing gravity and objectives, measures, and values, that you know to talk to economic buyers, you know about value-based pricing, and you understand that the concept that consulting is relationship-based and marketing is a big part of what we do. So all of that, I'm going to presume that you kind of all know about. I don't have to give you the spiel about that. You all understand that. So first I want to start with the idea of social media, because everybody thinks today that social media has changed everything about marketing. And in one sense that's true, but the key point here is it's still got the word media in, and media hasn't changed. The idea of media itself hasn't changed. We just have a new delivery method. So if you think about history, you go back to hieroglyphics, and then you've got, you know, markets where people would come and exchange goods and barter. And then you got into, you know, movable type and radio and TV, et cetera. It's all been the same idea, is that there's content that people are interested in, and somehow you pay to get the content. And either you pay for something in that you actually pay for a magazine or a book at one point, or a newspaper, or someone sponsors something and you don't have to pay. And that's what advertising has been when it started on, you know, newspapers or radio or TV. We used to have something called soap operas because Procter & Gamble, the soap company, paid for those, right? So today it's still media, and it's just things have moved online, Facebook and Zynga and blogs, Wall Street Journal online, whatever. So this whole idea that we're in this whole different world of marketing is true in some ways, but it's not true in others. And that's important to us as consultants, because it means that we still have some of the basics of marketing that haven't changed. And the main basic is that you still need to offer a quality product or service at a good value to an audience that is both interested in and willing to buy and also able to pay for it. So let me say that one more time. You have to have a good quality product or service. In the case of a consultant, it's a service we're selling, but you may have products that you're selling, such as books, webinars, CDs, etc. it's got to be a good value, so the pricing has to be right to understand the value you provide. And it's got to be marketed to an audience that's interested in it, they're willing to purchase it, and here comes the economic buyer part, they're able to make that decision to purchase it. So all of that hasn't changed, whether we're now talking about new media, old media, how we reach people, et cetera. That's still the basics core of what marketing is all about. So what we need to do in this new world, the same way we did in the old world, is we need to understand who our audience is first, what motivates them, where they go for information, who influences them, and what media do they consume or what are they actually looking at and reading to get the information that they're looking for. So it starts out by really understanding your target audience. And think about that both in terms of economic buyers as well as influencers, people who might recommend you. So understand who they are, how they're getting motivated, where they go for information, what influences them, and then what kind of media they're actually, and we use the word consume, even though don't think of consume as in consuming food, but what media they're actually absorbing and paying attention to. Now, what's important is it's not always going after what's shiny and new and seems most exciting. You have to look for what works. And this is something that Alan, I think, kind of talks about a lot on the forum, and I think sometimes folks aren't always listening. But some of the things that look really great may not be the right thing for you. So you have to try new things, but you think about what makes sense, and you may try things in a small way and see whether that reaches your target audience and gets you in front of economic buyers. And if it's not, then it may either not be right for you and where you're bringing your consulting practice, or it may be a little early. It may not be the right timing. So one of the key things as you think about this is to understand the difference between B2B, which is business to business, and B2C, which is business to consumer. Now, Alan talks about retail and wholesale, and it's similar. But we are, for the most part, those of us who are consultants in this B2B world, which, again, Alan talks about as wholesale to a certain degree. And that's where we sell to a business, and we sell to someone who's in the business, because we do sell to individuals, but we're selling to a business that's trying to then sell to someone else. And B2C is where we sell directly to a consumer. Now, sometimes if we're doing one-on-one coaching, that could be B2C, even though most part B2B, if you're doing coaching, you kind of for a number of individuals in an organization or a senior executive, that's still a business-to-business type of sell. When I would actually go and either buy coaching for myself and not have the company pay for it, or if I'm buying products or workshops or going to events, that's more focusing on the individual. Now, the reason to think about this is that a business-to-business sale is always more complex because there's always more players involved. It usually takes longer to make a decision. But the good news is that once you do get to a decision, it tends to be a bigger sale, and it tends to go on. And once you're in that organization, you can then build that relationship and move forward. And it's once you're in there, it's much harder to displace. So you all know that once you've built a relationship with some of those big clients, that there's going to be probably some additional projects coming along, and it's going to be harder for someone else to come in. It's also going to be harder for someone to come in and compete on price. Because you've established the value, they understand the fact that you're there with a relationship, and it's no longer about, gee, someone else can come in and I can save a few dollars. Yes, but what about all the time I've invested in this relationship? So that's why it's so important to do marketing and branding as much as when you're dealing with these business-to-business type of relationships as it is with consumers. And branding is not just about a slogan. It's about a consistent message. It's a representation of everything you say and do and how you represent yourself to your client. And that's why it's important. Again, I'm going to quote some of the things Alan says because I want to build on some of these things. He talks about how you dress and what car you drive. That's all part of your brand because as a consultant, you are the brand. Okay, we're not talking about McKinsey here. We're not talking about Apple. We're talking about each of you in your consulting practice. And you represent the brand and the company to your potential buyers. So your vocabulary, how you communicate in a written manner, that's all part of your brand. That's one reason, again, you'll see here Alan tell us about make sure your punctuation's right. You want to make sure your written communication is not just grammatically correct, but it looks good, and that your website represents you well. So your articles, how you speak, where you speak, the networking you do, all that is part of your branding. And so you are the brand, and all of that and what you say, where you go, how you represent yourself is very important to establishing this brand. Now, you might have different audiences in addition to economic buyers. There may be influencers. There may be recommenders. And so it's, you may need to tweak your messages, but still there should be one overall consistent message about who you are and what value you provide to clients. As Alan says, how the client is different after you've been there, how the client is better after you've been there. So that's kind of just an overview of some of the things to think about. Now, getting back to social media, one of the things people say is, well, social media doesn't cost anything. Isn't that great? We don't have to spend all this money in marketing. Well, that's true, but it's not true, because there's really three different types of costs that you have in marketing. And the first is the out-of-pocket cost. If I'm going to run an ad in the Wall Street Journal, it's going to cost me $250,000 or more for one page. So, yeah, that's going to cost me money out-of-pocket. And same thing if I produce, you know, a brochure or I do some kind of expensive video, et cetera. So with social media, I don't have that out-of-pocket money cost, but the other two costs are also just as important. And the second cost is time. And that's where social media can be very, very expensive, because it takes a lot of time to be active on Twitter. It takes a lot of time if you're going to do YouTube on a consistent basis, if you're going to be having a Facebook page and updating it, if you're going to have a blog and do a blog effectively. It takes a lot of time to have entries on a regular basis. So there's a time cost there. And what that means is if you're busy tweeting, you're not doing something else. And that something else you're not doing might be more important to build your business. But there's a third cost, too. So the first is money, the second is time, and the third is expertise. And that says that if you don't have the expertise or you're using someone who doesn't have the expertise, you may make mistakes in what you say or what you do, excuse me, or how you represent yourself, and therefore it takes more time, it takes more money, and you have to kind of spend time getting out of the rut that you've kind of built for yourself, because you may have said the wrong thing or done the wrong thing or not taken advantage of an opportunity. So when you think about marketing, think about all three costs, the money, the out-of-pocket money, the time, and what happens by not having the expertise to do things correctly the first time. So given that as a start, I want to look at some of the myths that I see specifically among consultants in marketing. And some of this I see within Alan's community, some of this I see with my work in women in consulting, and some of this I see in just talking to consultants in general. But just things that I see about marketing that I think you'd be better off not believing. The first one is the myth that if we build it, they will come. And I call that the Field of Dreams syndrome after the movie. And they'll say, you know, if we built a great practice, I've got, you know, great offerings, I've got great clients, you know, and if I do all that, then people should start coming to me. Well, that won't happen unless, number one, you have to build what clients need and want. So you can't really successfully market something that doesn't have an audience that's interested in it. But second, you have to make sure they know about you, and that you then have to remind them that they're there. Because they may know about you in the back of their mind, but when you're talking to them, it may not be the time that they actually have a need for your product or service. So you have to remind people, and that's where constant communication or ongoing communication is very important. And also making sure that people see you, they see you in the right settings. This is why networking, speaking, writing, getting published, all those things help keep you in front of people, that when they do have a need for your services, they say, hey, let's call Sima, let's call John. The other myth kind of related to this is if I do good work, everything will work out well. And maybe that will for a while. This is what I call the friends and family effect, which is that you have friends, you have family, they want to support you, they tell you about to their friends. And that works when you're starting out, but it's very limiting if you want to build a good, strong practice. So you need to actively get out there and have the equivalent of shouting from the rooftops to let people know you're there and that you can provide value for them. Now, another myth that I hear when we talk about marketing and branding is that a slogan is a brand. So if I have a great slogan or a great tagline, I now have a brand. Well, a brand is a representation of quality, and it's a way to differentiate you from other similar offerings. So, for example, you have an expectation of what you get for a brand. If I bring home a new tablet in a white box with a little logo of a fruit on it, I have an expectation of what's going to be in that apple box before I even see it, before I even open it, before I even play with it, do anything with it. I know what I'm going to expect from Apple because of the strong brand they have. To use another example, I know what to expect when I take a Coke off a shelf versus a Pepsi versus a Dr. Pepper versus a Gatorade or a 7-Up, any of those brands. I know what that's supposed to taste like. I have that vision in my mind because that brand is so strong. And Coke learned that the hard way with New Coke, which was a number of years ago, the fiasco with New Coke, where they had a soft drink that people actually liked in blind testing, but then they actually put it in a Coke can, and everyone said, that's not Coke. I know what Coke is, and that's not Coke. So what you really want to do is have everything about you, as I mentioned earlier, that represents your brand, and that includes a tagline that maybe sums it up, but just having a tagline is not enough. It's more about what the value that you provide to your clients and what they can expect to get from working with you. Which brings me to the next myth. My brand is about me. Well, it's not. Your brand is really not about you. It's about them, them being your client. And what I mean that is that I see too many people who say, here's who I am, here's what I've done, here's what I do. Well, that's great. But really, a client doesn't hire you because of who you are. They hire you because of what you can do for them. And that's very, very important. You need to be client-centric, and you need to understand, and again, Alan talks about the value that you provide. The only reason a client cares about you is because you can help them in some way, and they feel confident that you can help them. Either they know you, you've been referred, they've worked with you previously, they've heard good things about you, they go to your website, and it resonates with what they want. But this is all about what Alan says when he talks about improving the client's condition. I see way too many value propositions that are all about the consultant and not about the value that the consultant provides to the client. So go back to what you say, and if you call it an elevator pitch, which everybody's elevator pitch I've ever heard is long enough to go up to the tallest building in the world and come back down a few times. So very rarely do I hear anything that's short enough to really be an elevator pitch. But if you have a value proposition that talks about you as a consultant and doesn't talk about how you help clients or the value you provide, then that's something you may want to think about, because it may be sound good to you and to your mother and maybe to your family, but it isn't necessarily telling a client why they want to work with you. And what you really want to do is have them say, that's fascinating, tell me more. Tell me more about this. And then, of course, to follow on what Alan says, you say, well, tell me about what your issue is and I'll explain how I can help. And so you get them talking about themselves, not about you. So a myth that kind of follows on from that is that the broader I can be in positioning my practice, the better it is. Well, you don't want to be pigeonholed into a corner. So you don't want to define yourself so narrowly that you've eliminated 98% of the potential market. So I agree with that. But if you're too broad, your brand doesn't mean anything to anybody. And that's also a problem I see with some consultants. They come up with these broad statements that are so broad it could apply to almost any of us and to almost any client, and therefore it means nothing to anyone. So let me give you a classic example. This was not a consultant. This was actually I'll tell you who it was in a moment. But their brand statement was, we improve people's lives. What on earth does that mean? What does it refer to? It wasn't about curing cancer or solving world hunger or improving literacy or eradicating poverty, or even about navigating rush hour traffic jams, which would improve my life personally. It was a fitness center in the Bay Area, and their big slogan when you walked in the door was that their mission was to improve people's lives. I have no idea what that meant. I had no idea what their audience was. And did that mean under that slogan that they were going to offer fitness classes more often because that would improve my life? I mean, it was just so broad as to be meaningless. So that's really important, not to think of something that's so broad that it sounds like you do everything for everyone, but really, really focus on the value you can provide. Now, that doesn't mean that if someone says, can you do something a little bit off that, that you have to only talk to people specifically about that. But a brand is kind of an arrow that you get behind, and you don't want it to be too broad. If you think about a bow and arrow, there's a tip to that arrowhead, and that really hits the target. And you can put more force behind it, but you've got to go out and hit the target first to even get in the game and see what's going on. So one of the things I want to clarify is tactics versus strategies versus what I'm calling rationale. And I see this also very often in consultants confusing those. Tactics are about how, strategies are about what, and rationale is about why. So too often we focus on, for example, let's go off and take that hill by whatever means possible without understanding why. So you know, the question is, you know, let's get all, or the example is, let's get all dolled up and ready. We're going to go to REI and get the best equipment to go climb climb that mountain. Okay, that's great. That's the tactics are how we're going to do it. And that's the part that everybody sees, who we focus on that. The what we're going to do is we're going to climb that mountain. But what's missing very often is the rationale or why. So why are we doing these marketing programs? What do we mean to accomplish this? And where this really comes back to the point I made earlier about social media is I see that all the time. It's the focus on the tactic of the day. You know, here's this great thing to do. The latest one is Google+. And now there's something like 70 or 80 million people that have now signed up for Google+. And I was talking to my class last night, and I'm now teaching a class on integrating social media into the overall marketing strategy. It's part of a program where they've learned all the social media tactics, and now what I need to do is rein everybody back in and say, how is this going to help you accomplish something? And so we talked about Google+, how it's finally been successful for Google after they've tried to compete with Facebook. And then someone says, but what do you do with Google+ that you can't do somewhere else? And that's a really good question. I said, you know what? I have no idea. It's new. Right now it's got that newness factor where you have to be invited, so it's exclusive. So everybody wants to get invited because I want to prove that I'm in the in crowd. But once you get there, what am I going to do there? Why am I there? And that's not clear right now. And so that's the problem with going off with marketing tactics and even starting to have a strategy to say this is what I'm going to do, but you need to have the rationale to say why. So if you think of tactics as like the instruction on a GPS, take the second right, go 1.2 miles, then make a left, etc. That's how you physically get around. You may need to change the destination, which is what you're doing is I'm going from here to somewhere else, to achieve the real objective. So, for example, to use a California example, if I want to go to the beach in Santa Cruz for the weekend, and that's what I want to do, the traffic is terrible, so then I may need to rethink my destination. If the rationale is I want to spend a day relaxing, then sitting in traffic jams really defeats the purpose. So too many people would stick with their strategy. My strategy is on Sunday I'm going to the beach. And they'll do that, and they'll use the tactics they can find to get to the beach one way or the other, even when it becomes apparent that it doesn't fit with the overriding rationale. And this is something Alan talks about when he talks about why do you want to grow your business? Do you want to grow your business because you want to just say, I have a bigger business? Or do you want to grow your business because you want to thrive and you actually want to have more discretionary time, when he says wealth is discretionary time? So if you think about that, it's not just the tactics to get there are to eliminate labor intensity, and et cetera, but you also want to think from a marketing perspective, why am I doing this? You know, do I really want to go out and get a lot of these smaller clients that I can probably close with this marketing strategy? But they're the ones that are going to take a lot of time, and maybe it disagrees with my overarching rationale about why I'm doing this. So make sure your marketing strategies are tied into the why about what you want to do and how you want to build your business and why you're here to invest in marketing to start with. So given all that, I want to just take a moment and talk about some insights that I see from big companies. And as John mentioned, I work with all kinds of organizations, some consultants and small businesses to Fortune 100 companies in Silicon Valley. So I want to give you some insights from big companies that consultants can use. Now, not every big company is doing things that you want to practice, obviously, or that you want to replicate. So I'm talking about the big companies that are successful and have best practices. So here's 10 insights for you. The first one, consistency over time. Marketing is not a one-time event. It's an ongoing practice. So launch is the beginning, not the end result. So you'll hear people talk, especially in small companies, we've launched our product, okay, we're done now. But a large company that has best practices, that is doing well, understands that a launch, just like launching a rocket, is the beginning of a process, and you have to have consistency as how you market that over time. So think about that as a consultant. second. You have consistency across the organization. So to go back to our friends from Apple who are just such a wonderful example of marketing, every Apple product has the same look and feel. All Apple marketing looks and feels like it came from Apple. You know, everything you always know when you pick something up whether it was Apple or not. So once you've found something that works, as a consultant, apply it across everything you do. Don't create multiple brands with multiple looks and feels. Don't have different creative concepts because this one feels good and let's try something else out. If you've got something both in terms of a brand slogan that you think is working, a professional look and feel, you've established something and it's resonating with clients, use that on a consistent basis to build that marketing gravity that Alan talks about. Third, repetition, repetition, repetition. And that's like location, location, location in real estate. You need to do things over and over again. If it makes sense, repeat. If you're doing something right, go and do it again. Change it a little bit because it's a different client or different industry. Make it appropriate to the market you're looking at. But also, not everything sinks in the first time. The reason that we remember certain advertising, the reason we remember that annoying British-speaking gecko from Geico is because he's all over the place, and we hear him all the time. And so there's, you know, the first 1,000 times he was on TV or on the radio or wherever you saw him, you probably dismissed it until it got into your consciousness. So 15 minutes can save me, you know, 15% with Geico. It just comes to mind immediately, even though I've never used Geico and don't intend to. So people need to hear a message multiple times, and they need to hear it in multiple ways. So that's something to think about. Fourth, you also have to have consistency across media, and media being online, offline, in person. If you think about a large company, when they sell things, their sales force will get the same media, same message as their channel partners, as their employees. So make sure, however you're representing yourself, that you're being consistent across what you say and what you do. Fifth, brand building takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. When you're starting to get sick and tired of the marketing that you're doing, your audience is maybe just getting it right the first time. As an example, Intel used the phrase Intel Inside with that audio thing, ba-bum-bum-bum, for 23 years. And then they got a new management, and they moved off of it because they were tired of it. And they found as they moved off of it that the brand recognition and the pull that they got from marketing really just dramatically dropped off. So they realized what had happened, and they have walked away from a key asset, and they went back to it. And they evolved it, so they're using it a little differently. Now you see employees that are kind of singing the audio cue there. But the bottom line is they had such great resonance with that with their target audiences. And when they started that, no one knew or cared what chip was inside a PC or a computer or whatever. So they really changed the market with that, and it took time. So when you've got something and you think, gee, this is great, let's move on to something else, if you've got something that's working, stick with it. Another learning here, strategic trade-off. You're trading things off. You have to make a decision as an organization what you're going to do and what you're not going to do. For example, when I do market sizing for large companies, we look at potential markets. We evaluate the strengths and weaknesses of clients and competitors, potential partners. And then what's important is we give guidance to the organization, to the client, not only about where they should choose to focus, but also where they should choose not to focus. And that's because there are limited resources. Time is a limited resource, particularly if you don't want to spend your entire life doing this. You want to have a life outside of work. And so you want to have as much a trade-off that says, here's where I'm not going to go, as well as here's where I am going to go. And certainly you can always reevaluate that if it becomes a big enough opportunity in a new area to say, maybe I need to change direction. But it should be pretty clear that if you're looking at, again, low-margin business that's small clients, business that's not going to come to bigger fourth projects, et cetera, you may want to say, hey, I don't want to invest in that. Because one of the things that becomes obvious is it becomes as much work to take care of a small client in some ways as it is a bigger one. So if that's the case, let's go after the bigger billings and let's not necessarily focus on those smaller billings, and that's the trade-off we're making in terms of where we're focusing our business. Next, measure what you can, but use measurements wisely. So these are guidelines, not gospel. Just because you got a certain measurement doesn't necessarily mean that everything else needs to stop, and you work by that alone. You need to put your own kind of spin on it. You need to put to think about it, because you get what you measure. For example, we used to say in some of the companies I worked at that our sales force was coin-operated. That meant that whatever we told them to do, whatever we compensated them for, we would get that behavior. And that's a problem when you focus only on metrics. So if you're looking at number of visitors to your website and you're judging how successful your marketing is by number of visitors to your website, you could be optimizing for that, but that's not the right metric. The right metric is really how are you doing in terms of closing business? Are you getting new clients coming to you? If not, then why are you measuring the number of visitors to your website? So that's only part of the equation. So understand you need to measure to see how you're doing, but use the measurement wisely and make sure that you're thinking about that and not just looking at a metric and saying, hey, I'm doing better. Because the metrics, the real metrics that count are you building your business? Are you building it profitably? Are you closing new clients, et cetera, whatever you're interested in specifically. Another best practice, adapt before you adopt. So this is really important because take what will work for your business. Don't just grab everything wholesale because it worked for someone else without considering how applicable it is to your business. And successful large companies are always benchmarking the competition, their peers, other people who are in other industries to say, what did they do and what kind of practices did they start using that we could take and put in our organization? But just because another organization is doing it doesn't mean it's going to work here. I need to adapt that first because there's different conditions. Now, here's a corollary. None of us are Alan Weiss. Alan has been very open in sharing what's worked for him. He's told us what he's done right, what he's done wrong, how he's building things, how he's written books. You've watched him write a book on the forum, all kinds of things. Many of these things are going to work for us as well. But you can't come in as a new consultant with a new practice and expect to do what Alan's doing today and get the same results. Alan put in a lot of time and effort to build his brand over decades. And so a lot of what he's telling us is here's what you get to when you have a strong brand. We can't necessarily come in and put together the programs that he's building today and expect to get the kind of results. We have to go back and do the groundwork. And if we're closer to having an established practice and there's other things we'll pick up from Alan that will be appropriate to us, then maybe the beginning stuff isn't relevant. So you need to make sure to adapt what everyone is saying to your specific situation and understand that we're not all going to be the same. Even if we can take all those best practices in, we're in our own situation and we need to take what we can do and take that advice and make sure it relates to where we are and what we can accomplish with our set of skills and where our practice is. We want to drive execution, so the best strategy in the world doesn't mean anything if you don't execute effectively. And certainly you've seen organizations that have incredible strategies but never got out the door. Alan says move a few things forward a mile, not a thousand of things an inch. And too often I see consultants that want to do, they see all these great marketing things. It's like kind of like going into a buffet and seeing all this food you want to eat and putting it all on your plate. Well, you can't possibly eat all that at once because you're going to get sick. You can't digest it. And you're not going to enjoy any of it. So the way to do that is to take a few things and try them first and say, hey, let's try this, see how it works. Then you move forward a little bit. You're still hungry. You go for something else. So even Apple, to go back to my example of the day, there's areas of technology where they don't play or they don't lead. Networking, graphics, storage, they buy all that stuff. They don't develop it. They focus on their areas of strength, and their new products come from building on those existing areas of strength. So think about when you're thinking about your business and your practice and thinking about your marketing, think about what you want to move forward and how you need to execute whatever programs you've decided to focus on, whatever marketing you've decided is really going to be the core of your marketing gravity. And don't try and do everything at once. Get that done first and then add to it. And then finally, check in and recalibrate. If something's not working, don't follow that path blindly because you said, hey, I'm going to do it and I'm going to do it no matter what. Make adjustments. There's times you may want to walk away from something. You want to say, hey, this isn't just working. This just is not working and I need to look at something else. And Alan has told us times that he's tried things and they didn't work and he said, hey, I tried it. If you're not trying, if you're not failing, you're not reaching far enough. But you then have to say, hey, you go down a path a certain distance and say, let's not throw good money after bad or put more time into this, but let's look at what's successful. So let me just kind of summarize those again. You need consistency over time. It's not a one-time event. It's an ongoing process. You need consistency across everything you do. Repetition, repetition, repetition. Do things again and again till the message gets in. We don't hear things the first time. Consistency across all your media and all your channels, how you do things. Brand building takes time. It doesn't happen overnight. So allow for the fact that it's going to take longer than you think it will for your clients and potential clients to hear you. Make strategic trade-offs. You don't want to do everything. You want to focus on as much what you don't do as well as what you do do. Measure what you can, but use the measurements effectively or wisely. Adapt before you adopt best practices. Drive execution. The best strategy in the world means nothing without execution. And check in and recalibrate. Make sure that you're making adjustments based on real-world events. So I want to just tell you one more myth before I turn this over back to John and Sima for questions and to see if there's any thoughts you have. And one of the myths that I hear a lot of time from consultants is, I can do all this marketing stuff all on my own. Well, you know, most of us would never think about writing our own computer code or doing our own legal contracts or wiring our own electrical work in our houses, at least I hope not. But somehow we feel we can do our own marketing. And to a certain extent, we're all part of our own marketing because this is a relationship business. As I mentioned, everything you do is marketing. But think about it this way. You can bake your own cake and you can make your own bread, and it probably will taste good. But if you're having a big party and you want to impress people, you want to have a big event, you probably want to go out and buy something from a professional baker that looks polished and professional looking and it's as attractive as it can be. And furthermore, it's not going to take as long because, again, if you're not the professional baker, it's going to take you more time to make the cake right and make it look right, et cetera, and make it as presentable as it possibly could be. So why not focus on what you're good at and get help from the professionals when you need to really go out and make something look as professional and polished as it can for the big things that count. So get help with your website. Get help if you're doing marketing messaging. Get help if you're looking at how to position your value proposition and you don't know if something's working. Get help if you're looking at creating a book or a product and you need to make sure it's packaged well and things of that nature. You can still bake the cake yourself, and you certainly need to know what it is you want to bake and your goal in getting there. But it's okay to just the same way that you would go to the baker and get something that looks great from the bakery to serve to guests. It's okay to do that with marketing as well as everything else. So I'm going to turn this back to John and see if you have any questions or thoughts, because I've been talking now for quite a while.
Wow, thanks a lot, Linda. That was a lot, and we really appreciate that. It's a lot of information to process. I'm going to unmute people here in a second, but before we do that, excuse me. Linda, I wanted to talk a little bit about if you wouldn't mind addressing the newbie consultant. I know Alan ran a program called Zero to Three, and basically what that program was about is, how do I go from ground zero to the 300,000 level? Obviously, you know what kind of fragile state that consultant's in. You have a very resource constrained, probably solo, that's doing it themselves. And it's almost like a do or die. You can correct me if you think I'm wrong, but if some of the stuff that isn't done, if it isn't done correctly from a marketing standpoint, no revenue is going to come in, and your business is going to go south. And if you have a 6-month nest egg, and you make a 3-month mistake, you're in trouble. So what advice do you give the new consultant from? And let's use your model. The why is, or the purpose is, I need to bring some money in. And so what do they do, and how do they do that?
So there's a couple things here. And I think really what you want to invest in is understanding making sure your value proposition is on target to get started. So particularly if you're just getting started, don't worry about what your practice is going to look like in 3 or 5 years. You need to get some money in the door now, as you mentioned, to keep things going. So think about where you can provide value to clients in the short term, and how you can market yourself to them. What is the key value you're going to provide? So create a value proposition. In this day and age, I think it's absolutely critical that you have a website, because people just start to Google you. People start to see what's about going on about you. So you don't have to invest thousands of dollars in a absolute fantastic website to start with, but just make sure you have the right messaging. Make sure it looks professional. It doesn't look like you threw it up in 5 minutes. And make sure that you're getting connected with the right people in the right way. So you want to make sure you have the right name for your business, that you're going out and talking to people the right way. You want to make sure that you have a web presence out there. So if I start looking for John Worthington, I'm going to find some things about John Worthington. You want to make sure you have referrals and testimonials. It's always great to say nice things about yourself, but it's much better if a third party says it. It's even better when a client says it, and the best, you know, even better still when you can quote the name and the company of the client. But whatever you can get people to say about you, and you know, the first thing you say is, well, I'm a new consultant, so I don't have a lot of clients. Well, you've worked with other people, and there's obviously people you've worked with in business situations who will say nice things about you, and that's okay to start. So make sure you've got all that in place. Make sure that you're representing yourself in the effective manner. It's kind of what we used to talk about in the organization. You always used to dress for the job you wanted, not the one you had today. So if you were a director and you wanted to be a VP, you looked and said, what do the VPs dress like? What do the VPs sound like? So I think that's why it's important to be on Allen's forums and say, what do the successful consultants dress like in terms of their marketing, and what does their branding look like? And how do I start to make myself look as if I really, that's where I belong. I belong at that party. I shouldn't be at the kids' table. I belong at the adults' table, so to speak. So it's not misrepresenting yourself, but it's basically making people feel that this is where you belong, and this is how you should start to, they should start to look at you. And then you can always go back. What's nice about the web is it's so inexpensive and so easy to make changes. So you can have a very small web presence in terms of a website with just a few pages. You can expand that, and then once you get going, then you can take that to the next level. You can start to do video, which is very inexpensive today. Have people interview you, put it on YouTube. You can start to do a blog, which doesn't take much time whatsoever in terms of money, but it does take time in terms of actually updating it, etc. So there's a lot of things where you don't have to make huge investments, but you can just get started, and people can see, you can send people there and say, here's what I'm doing. You can start speaking in front of organizations, associations. Whether you get paid or not, it doesn't matter. But you find an area in which you become a thought leader, and you start speaking in front of them. So all of those are tactics you can use, and I would really send you back to Getting Started in Consulting, which is just a wonderful book, even if you're not on day one. But you're starting out, to go back and read that and say, look at what Allen tells you about the things that you really need to start with.
Linda, cool. This is Sima. I know that there was a couple of other people who had some questions, and we only have about 10 minutes.
Okay.
Well, Sima, we have about 20 minutes. If you have a question, Sima, and if you... If you do, that's great. If you don't, then we'll open it up to the rest of the people.
Yeah, I just wanted to open it up.
Okay, sure. Let's do that. Hi, does anybody have a question for Linda?
Yeah, Linda, hi. This is Maynard Brussman calling.
Hi.
Hi, Linda. Hey, great presentation. Could you comment on Allen seems to, like, at least my understanding of Allen is more of a generalist. And all the other marketing gurus seem to all, the mantra seems to be having a niche. So can you comment on having a niche or a target audience versus being a generalist?
Okay, so the question is, is it better to have a niche or to be a generalist? And I think you have to have a niche to a certain degree. Like I said, if you want to say you improve people's lives, I think you're too much of a generalist. And I think what starts to happen is over time, you build from a targeted area into a broader area. So, for example, when I started out, I did marketing specifically for technology companies because that's where I came out of, and that was where I had strength. And then over time, I was like, well, you know what? I can take some of this, and it, what I do is a process, and I can apply that to other industries. And so I started working with other big companies. Well, then I said, well, okay, now I can apply this to other areas, because it turns out that smaller organizations and consultants, professional service firms, entrepreneurs, they can use this as well. So over time, but I still focused on what I do with marketing. So I don't come in and help organizations in hiring. I don't build, you know, dynamic strategic workforces. I don't help with sales compensation. So it's still pretty clear about what I do, but what I do is expand who I do it for, building on what I've done before. And so I think that works. And again, when you're someone who has the decades of experience that Alan has, it's very it's powerful to be able to take what he does, and he can apply that to just about everybody. And so I think that that's important to look and not limit yourself. But as you're getting started, you want to focus on a place where you can actually start to show that you can provide value right away, and where people will say, gee, you know, show me what you can do, and you can show that. Now, Alan also talks about when someone says, well, you don't have experience in the auto industry, that's exactly why you need me, because I've experienced somewhere else. And I've done this with the best companies. But to get there, you have to first get those first couple assignments where you have done that with the right company, and you can show that you've done the process, if not the content. So I think it's important to have enough of a specialization that people can pick you out in a crowd and say, that's why I want you. But don't be so specialized that you only work with certain people on certain days of the week and certain letters in their last name. And you know, you see some consultants that talk about they're so pigeonholed into a corner that they've limited themselves to five companies in the world that will need exactly what they want. And I have to tell you, I've now had my own consulting practice since 2003. I can't tell you what my practice is going to look like in 2 or 3 years in terms of the services I'll be offering or the clients I'll be talking to, because I couldn't tell you 3 years ago that I'd be doing what I'm doing today. And so I leave it open from that perspective. So does that answer your question?
Oh, yeah, that's great, Linda. Thank you
great,
so much.
Thanks.
Somebody else have a question for Linda?
Yeah, Linda, this is Dave Gardner.
Hey, Dave Gardner. How are you?
Great. You redid your website recently, kind of changed your branding and the way you talked about yourself. What can you say about that experience that would be valuable for the rest of us?
Well, one of the things that's kind of interesting about that is, you know, even though I'm a marketer, it's really hard to do what you do for yourself. It's the whole thing about the shoemaker's children never have shoes, right? So what I had to do is a lot of the changes I made were as a result of going through total immersion with Alan, which I highly recommend if you really want to focus on making changes. And Alan said to me, here's some things that I think you need to do to take your business to the next level. And he was absolutely right. And it's like, darn, I'm a marketing person. Why didn't I see that? Well, it's the same reason that leadership consultants need someone to talk to them about leadership, or a financial consultant needs someone to help them with their finances, because we're so busy helping everybody else. But really what I think I did is again, take some of the things that I've been doing and take them to the next level. And so where I've been focusing more narrowly, I now said, here's a broader way of looking at myself, and I want to make sure that I'm dressed to look good at the adults' table when I go to this bigger party. And so really that was what that was all about. The company name, for example, had been L2M Associates, which just sounded cool
right
at the time. And I changed, and people said to me, well, what does that stand for? Well, it stands for leverage to market. Well, Alan says, well, why are you making people go through that effort of having to figure that out? Why don't you just say that? Well, duh. You know, so you're absolutely right. So we changed the name of the company to Leverage to Market Associates, and now people get it more. And so I made it easier for them to figure out what the value was that I could provide. And I spent the time and money and effort to really invest in myself and show that I could provide these services, that I could that I had this expertise, to make people see that no matter who they were, that there was something for them. And so that's the other thing I did. The first, my original website, which wasn't terrible, was a lot about me and the services I could provide. The new web presence talks about, here's who you are. If you're a big corporation, here's what we do for you. If you're a consultant, here's what we can do for you. If you're a small, medium-sized business, here's the challenges you have. Here's how we can help. And so it really was applying a lot of the things that I tell my clients to my own practice, and it made a huge difference.
And so have you had, what's the receptivity been like of people who've known you for a long time versus, and new clients? Are you finding that things are getting easier or that there's greater clarity about what you do?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, well, people who know me for a long time said, hey, this looks great. You know, we love to see where you're going. And this just makes sense. And newer clients are coming to me saying, you know, I saw something on your website. One of the reasons that kind of forced me to do this is I had been brought in as a referral to a potential new client, and it was in an area that I certainly had the expertise to help her with, but it wasn't an area I focused on my website. So we had an initial meeting, and we set up a second meeting to talk, and then she called me back and said, well, you know, I went to your website, and it just doesn't look like, you know, what I need is the area you focus on. And I said, well, that's fine, but, you know, I can do this for you. Yeah, well, you know, I'll get back to you. So I realized that, you know, that she was going to my website as a credibility tool to see what I had, and I was so focused on, at the time, technology, marketing, and large companies, and she was a startup, and she was a technology-based startup, but what was there wasn't resonating with her. And so then I said, you know what, I'm really limiting myself. This is to go back to the previous question. I'm limiting myself to a part of the market where I can go broader. And so I went and created this website that had specific audiences. So if you're a large technology company, go to that tab and you can see what I can do for you. But if you're a startup or if you're some of these other categories where I also am offering services, now you could go to that website and you could say, hey, that's me, and these are the issues I have, and that relates to it. So it's been helpful for new clients because I don't get the questions, well, I'm not exactly like one of the clients you had before. Why could you help me? So it's really helped kind of, I think, broaden the services and the market that I can go after.
Yeah, Linda, if I could follow up on that. I had a similar situation happen recently on my mass customization piece where a company in Sweden contacted me and they said, well, do you have experience in our industry? And you don't tell me what industries you've worked in. And I said, if I told you what industries I worked in, you'd probably say, well, he hasn't worked in our industry, so I'll move on.
Right.
I said, what I really have is process expertise. But you have a subject expertise, and how do we blend those two things together to create a solution for you that you really need? And it was kind of an aha moment for the other person. So it's interesting. I like what you had to say about the way you approached it. I think
Great. There's
some parallel there.
Yeah, absolutely. And even though, you know, marketing, we deal a lot with content, but there is a process. The reason I can take what I've learned in large companies and help you apply that to your business as a consultant is because it's a process. And you have to, if you're going to write a news release, you're going to write a product brief or whatever, you need to understand the content. But from a strategic perspective, it's a process of marketing yourself. And that's mm-hmm. why I can learn from Dave, who does mass customization, and you all can learn from other folks on the forum, even though you're not in the same business.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for the question, Dave. Thanks, everybody. Great questions. I'm going to mute everybody, and we'll let Linda close out with some final thoughts.
Great. So I want to go back a little bit about online marketing, because we do so much about what we where our marketing is today online. So a couple of pieces of advice. Think before you post. You are what you post. And this whole idea about having things that you post that are private in your personal life and things that are professional, don't believe it. If you can figure out the privacy settings on Facebook today, don't worry, wait a minute, it will change tomorrow. All this stuff becomes evolving, and even if you think you've set your privacy settings right, you hit something and you do something a little bit incorrectly, and whoops, you've got something out there for the world to see. So be very careful about what you post and what you say. We've all heard the stories about people who tweeted about how they didn't like their client or their boss, and then they no longer had that problem because they no longer had that client or they no longer had that job. So think about that. The web is enduring, not endearing. So once you put something out on the web, it is virtually impossible to get it out there, get it off of there, rather. And I have worked with clients where things have been put out there that weren't accurate, and it was a lot of work to get something inaccurate off the web. There is a presentation I made that was translated into Japanese that I made when I was at Sun probably 15 years ago, and if you Google me, it's still showing up in my Google listings. Now, it's not relevant to what I do today, but it's not a problem. So it's definitely things are there for a long time. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. So just because you can do all these things doesn't mean you should invest the time and effort to do them. So think wisely. Beware of fads. I only have two words for you when you think about fads, Second Life. I was telling my classes last night that there was a time when Second Life was going to be the second coming, and if we weren't all on Second Life, we were going to be left behind. And someone in the class said, what's Second Life? I've never heard of it. Well, it's totally gone the way of a little niche product that only a few people are using. But there was a time when that was it. And you hear that, you know, Facebook, Google+, you know, Twitter, Foursquare, whatever it is, be very careful and make sure that these things are going to be around a while. You are what you write. Your writing represents you to the world. And, yes, you can do audio, and, yes, you can do video, but a lot of what still happens is very much online. So be very much aware of what you say and how you say it. And yet content alone is not enough. You need to present things. You need to be easy to find, easy to access, easy to refer and recommend. And you need to, when someone sees your stuff, they have to be able to look at it and say, wow, that looks good as well as sounds good. So I have the Miranda warning, which is that that whatever you say can and will be used against you in the court of public opinion. And if you want to find out more about that, I have these set of 90-second videos on my website called Just a Moment for Marketing. Go check out and hear what I've got to say about that, because there's some good advice there. And then finally, I have what I call the platinum rule. You know, the gold rule is do unto others as you would have done to yourself. But that's not the way you want to do things. You want to do unto others as they would have done to them. So make sure that you think about your clients and do things the way that they want to have them. Put information out there the way they want to receive it. Not the way you want it, but the way they want to do it. It's about them. It's not about you. And go out and knock them dead. So, and finally, I just want to thank everybody for allowing me to be here. It's so much fun to interact with Alan's community and to be able to give back. And so I have a special deal. I have these consultant power packs, which are collections of my teleseminars like this on marketing. Normally they're $129, but if you're interested, I'm going to offer it $79 for members of Alan's community. Go to my website, which is leveragetomarket.com, and put in the promotion code COFAX. That way I'll know you're from Alan's community. And certainly there's lots of free resources there as well. So it's leveragetomarket.com. There's free tips about how to market a professional services business. There's my videos. There's recordings of things I've done. If you're selling to nonprofits, there's some information about that. So go and enjoy, and hopefully it will be useful for you. And thank you very much for allowing me to be here today.
Wow. And with that, we'll go ahead and close out this conference. By the way, I bet you on the promo code, if you spell COFAX wrong, you don't deserve the discount. You're not a member of the community. So you have
That's
to go
right.
find that out.
And if you have to ask why COFAX, then you don't get it either. But you
yeah,
don't
exactly.
it doesn't matter
if it's wow, Linda, it's been terrific. It's amazing how fast the time flies, but I really got a lot of it. I can't thank you enough for doing this. Simi, you want to say a couple of words?
Yeah, I just want to say thank you again, Linda. I got a lot out of it. And, you know, when John's question about beginning marketers, beginning consultants, that information is really good, not only for people who are beginning, but for people who've been consulting for a while and may not have a big budget.
Absolutely. And none of us have as much budget as we want, whether we're a small consultant or not.
Isn't that the truth? All right, you guys, on behalf of Simmer Lieberman and myself, John Wethington, I really want to appreciate you taking the time out of your day to do this. And have a great day, and we'll talk to you on the next teleseminar. Thanks, guys.